In my other life, I'm a professor, assistant professor of social work at St. Olaf College. And prior to that life, I was a medical social worker for many years, working in hospitals and nursing homes. The last 3 to 4 years prior to teaching, I worked with people with HIV and AIDS, and have maintained that as a research interest, a personal interest, and I also teach a course at St. Olaf during the January term on HIV and AIDS called AIDS in Our Lives. It has consistently been an interesting class, and more and more students taking it each year, which has sort of impressed me. I guess I always think, well, maybe people are going to think it doesn't affect them, but not many more students are interested than I'm usually available to teach, so it's good. Let me get a quick show of hands on how many of you work with HIV/AIDS folks professionally. Anybody here? Okay, sort of, peripherally. You may do it and not know. Medical professions generally? Okay. How many folks here know somebody personally with HIV or AIDS? Okay. And how many of those folks know a woman or a child? Okay. I think it's important to focus on the impact of HIV and AIDS in certain populations, but I will say initially that I don't want us to get into the idea of focusing on certain groups. Early on, when HIV and AIDS began as an epidemic, there was a lot of talk about who the high-risk groups were. Gay men, Haitian men, IV drug users, and it was very easy under that sort of rubric to say it's them and not me. So I'm careful to try to use the term populations throughout this week, and I'm conscious of the risk of people thinking again about those groups. Women, however, make up 50% of the population, so it's a little harder for most of us to say them and us when most of us are intimately connected with women and children in some way or other. I will also give another sort of caveat before I start, and that is I always feel slightly inadequate teaching about HIV and AIDS. I think the best teachers are people who have HIV and AIDS. Much of what I've learned about it is directly from people living with this virus. Much of what I say comes from those folks' mouths, and they've asked me to teach in certain ways, so I do try to bring the perspective of people living with it as directly as I can, but it's a difficult task to do, so I'm always feeling slightly overwhelmed at the idea that I'm trying to teach about this. I will add that. I decided to focus today on women and children, and this is to put them together because of a fairly obvious connection. Children, many of the children in this country and in the world who get HIV and AIDS get it because of their mothers. It does not absolve males of responsibility, because many of those women have gotten HIV or AIDS from their male sexual partners. But it is to say we're going to look more intimately at the connection between women and children today. Just to do a quick reminder, I did some general sort of overall HIV/AIDS stuff yesterday. For those of you who weren't there yesterday, do a couple little definitions. The difference between HIV and AIDS is important to talk about. HIV being the human immunodeficiency virus that most people around the world believe is the causative agent for full-blown AIDS. AIDS in itself is the acquired immune deficiency syndrome, which is a syndrome of diseases. It is not one specific disease. There are at least 15, probably more diseases now that can fall into the category of AIDS. Anywhere from 4 to 10 times the number of people who have AIDS have HIV. So there are many, many more people with HIV than AIDS. Most of the statistics we see are of people with AIDS, because them we know. Most of them we know. Most people with HIV we don't know about. It's difficult to know if you have HIV if you're not feeling sick, or if you're not considering yourself somebody who is at high risk. So it's important to talk about the difference in terms, and I'll try to be clear through the week about when I'm talking about those with HIV and when I'm talking about those with AIDS. Any of you who were here yesterday have follow-up questions or anything I should sort of address before we get started today? Anything that was left? Okay, I'm pretty informal with my teaching, so please interrupt whenever something isn't clear or you want to add something from your own experience or some sort of observation. A couple of brochures I have sitting around the room that people can take a look at. I also have 4 stacks of handouts that I urge you to take, but only if you're going to use them for some reason. Otherwise, I'll recycle them as well as somebody else. The small one is the ELCA Statement on AIDS that was adopted in 1988, so we can be aware of what our church body, for many of us, has said about AIDS. The gray one is a one-page sheet that talks about the incidence of AIDS and HIV around the world. The light sheet here lists by state the number of AIDS cases and the per capita rate of AIDS in every state in the United States. So you might want to sort of check and see where your state is in relation to others. And the blue sheet is a bibliography on additional information about pediatric AIDS or AIDS in children. I do want to mention two of the books in the bookstore out of the several good ones on HIV or AIDS. One is Go Toward the Light. It's the story about Chris Euler, a young boy from California, written by his mother, a true story about his having HIV and AIDS and his death and life from that. It's a very powerful, very moving story. I recommend it to anybody. And then the AIDS Reader has an excellent chapter about women, calling women the missing persons in the HIV epidemic, often not talked about in the public media and the press. It talks about AIDS, though, from lots of points of view, social, political, ethical issues, and quite readable for the layperson, so I suggest that also as a good purchase. I also neglected yesterday and was reminded by Nancy to put in a plug for our resource center at Holden, right across the hall here, and she's got lots of stuff on HIV and AIDS and lots of other wonderful topics, some free for people to take copies of, some for you to browse through there, but please make use of that while you're here at the Village. Okay, just to start out talking about women, I want to give you a quote by Antonia Novello. People know who that is? Current Surgeon General of the United States, a Hispanic woman. She makes this quotation about HIV and AIDS. The AIDS epidemic is an invisible epidemic in women, and it needs to be a visible one. We know relatively little about the natural history of HIV in women, because the vast majority of those persons studied have been men. The numbers of women with AIDS has had the greatest increase of all groups. African American women are 9 times more likely to die of AIDS than white women. Economic and social pressures are greater than the risk of AIDS for many women. Women need to reach out to other women. Empowerment of women is the key and prevention is essential. Our government must be committed to the equitable distribution of resources to women. Women must be seen as equal partners in policy development pertaining to health. Let me give you just a little bit of the demographics, some of the numbers about women, HIV and AIDS here and in the world. Currently about 10% of the cases of full-blown AIDS in this country are in women. That's increased from about 6% 4 or 5 years ago. So it is a rapidly increasing population. About 22,000 women currently have AIDS in this country, out of 220,000 people who have AIDS. Black and Hispanic people generally make up together 19% of the population. They make up about 75% of the people with AIDS in this country. And that's true for women as a subcategory of blacks and Hispanics. About 75% of the women in this country with AIDS are black or Hispanic. In the 1980s, 500,000 cases of AIDS are believed to have occurred in the world among AIDS in children. That's 500,000. In the 90s, an additional 3 million are expected to die of AIDS in this world. AIDS is the leading cause of death in women ages 20 to 40 in certain cities in sub-Saharan Africa and in Western Europe and in a number of the American countries. In Kampala, Uganda, capital of Uganda, 24% of pregnant women are HIV positive. That's a quarter of the women are HIV positive. In Newark, New Jersey, 4.3% of pregnant women are HIV positive. In Miami, 3.6% of pregnant women. In New York, 3.1%, and in Boston, 1.7%. The younger a woman is when she dies of AIDS, the fewer children she'll have, which has dramatic ramifications for population growth in many other countries. And Dan was just pointing out that he'd heard a report that a number of the family planning programs in developing countries have been suspended because they say AIDS will do it, because it's hitting so many of our young women of childbearing age that we have very few children. A couple more statistics. AIDS cases in women are now increasing faster than in men. In 1989, cases in women increased 28%. In men, they decreased 18%. In the early 80s in the United States, there was one woman for each 14 men who had AIDS. Today it's one woman for every eight men. AIDS is now one of the five leading causes of death of women in the U.S. ages 15 to 44. It is the leading cause of death for women in New York City, aged 20 to 39. There are 3 million infected women in the world with HIV. In the Caribbean and Latin America, the rate used to be 8 to 10 men for every one woman. Now it's 2 to 3 men for every one woman. One United Nations expert says that 1,500 women per day become infected who have had no sexual partners other than their husbands. 1,500 women a day in the world, he estimates. I think I'll leave that for the number of statistics. It gets a little bit overwhelming to think about numbers. Suffice it to say that women in the world are about 50% of the people with HIV or AIDS. In this country, it certainly isn't that big, like I said, about 10%, but ever increasing. What I'd like us to do today, since I'm a social worker and not a demographer or a statistician or an epidemiologist, is talk more about some of the psychosocial, as we say, effects of HIV and AIDS in the population of women and children. And I'd like your help with that. Initially, I'd like to split you up, I think, in groups of probably three, and have 10 or 15 minutes or so for you to look at these two questions. What are some areas of concern for women with HIV and AIDS? Primarily, how are those areas of concern different from concerns for men? How are women differently affected than men? And I didn't know if that was the right grammar. How are women affected differently than men or from men? I didn't know how to put that. But thinking primarily, to sort of get you started, thinking in these kinds of categories, what physical differences might there be for women in HIV? And this will sort of point out what you know and what you don't know, and we'll talk about some of those when we come back together. Social, spiritual, psychological, economic, and some of the ethical dilemmas that are facing women that maybe don't face men with HIV. So would you take time to just get in little groups of three, ideally, and we'll take maybe 10 minutes or so. You don't have to write anything down. Just sort of talk through these questions, if you do.
We have a concern about, or a question about whether or not the diseases that women get in the syndrome, AIDS syndrome, are different than men, and we'd like to know about that from you. And also, if they are different, the concern for lack of press, lack of financial support for those illnesses, so women are getting less treated than men.
A couple issues you bring up. Yes, there are a number of different physical illnesses, infections that women get that men don't get. Pelvic inflammatory disease, acute and frequent, can often be a sign of HIV infection underlying. Cancers of the reproductive organs and system that men don't get, those are the most common. The current definition for AIDS put out by the Center for Disease Control, which is used worldwide, does not include some of those diseases of women. So there's been a lot of pressure in the last 3 to 4 years from women's groups around the country and from the AMA onto the CDC saying you must change the definition of AIDS. Definition of AIDS is due to change this year sometime. It was going to change in January, then in April, and it hasn't changed yet. But it's not going to include these definitions, these diseases specifically. What it is going to do is say that people who have a T-cell count, T-cell is blood, the blood cells, the white cells that HIV infects, if you have a T-cell count of 200 or less, then you're diagnosed with full-blown AIDS, even if you're asymptomatic. That will include a lot of these women, because most of the women who get these diseases have real low T-cell counts. But it's not going to include all of them, so there's still some controversy about that. The other is that healthcare workers, and you mentioned this, typically do not think about women as being at risk for HIV or AIDS. So a lot of doctors, a lot of nurse practitioners, midwives, whomever, don't think about AIDS when a woman comes in with various symptoms or a disease and is diagnosed with a disease. As a result, women are diagnosed later, usually, so they're much sicker, usually, and they die sooner, usually, than men. So that is a big concern. Good. What else, Matt?
Just to connect with that, though, isn't it true that it's not just a matter of semantics in terms of definition, but that there are other real factors, such as being able to get medical assistance, government assistance? I mean, I've read about if you're diagnosed with AIDS, then you're eligible for certain things. If you're not, then you aren't. And a number of women, because they don't fit the definition, simply haven't been eligible to get the kind of care.
That's right. Social Security disability requires that you have a full-blown AIDS diagnosis. You can be really, really sick with HIV and symptoms. If you don't have one of these diseases under the CDC definition, you don't get Social Security disability. Now, that brings up a big issue under economics, both for individual women and for us as a country. that if we add lots of people under the AIDS diagnosis, we got lots more people who are going to get Social Security disability, and eventually Medicare. You get disability and you're on it for 24 months, and then you get Medicare. So that is adding people to those social programs. So that's a good point. Okay, other medical? Yeah.
We had a question. Do they know whether pregnancy exacerbates the HIV because of the stress on your body, so that you may not want to get pregnant?
Yeah. There are a lot of studies that are showing now in the early stages that meaning that getting pregnant when you have HIV at any stage of illness is going to probably progress the woman further to full-blown AIDS. We haven't done big enough studies to say absolutely for sure, but it's highly likely because of the stress that pregnancy puts on a healthy woman in general. So that brings up another question about whether women ought to be pregnant. It falls into the ethical realm here of questions about ought women who are known to be HIV be allowed to be pregnant, or ought we sterilize them? Once they are pregnant, ought they be allowed to have abortions, or made to have abortions, or forced to carry a child to term? Do you know what the percentage is of women who are HIV positive and pregnant bearing HIV positive children?
33 1/3.
Somewhere between 30% and 50%, depending on where the studies are done and which women are studied. It looks likely that the sicker the woman is, if she's got full-blown AIDS, that she's more likely to birth a baby who's going to have HIV. The more well she is, the fewer symptoms she has, the less likely the baby will have HIV. But there's at most about a 50-50 chance that this baby will be positive, and we don't know that with HIV, which raises a terrific ethical dilemma, and certainly some physical dilemmas for mom and for baby. Okay, anything else in this? No? Yeah.
I just want to understand correctly, does the course of AIDS, is it shorter for women than men?
In actuality, but we don't know why that is. I mean, it has to do partly with people, healthcare workers and women themselves, not really thinking about AIDS for us. And sometimes we go in later and we're sicker and we don't get treated. Many more women may also be poor, not have health insurance. One of the social issues I want to talk about that you probably did is that women are the caregivers in this country. And many women put the needs of their children, their spouses, their partners, their elderly parents first and say, once they're okay, then I'll go to the doctor. I have a good friend in a small town near Northfield whose daughter is 5, just turned 5, and has AIDS. Her husband has HIV. She has HIV. She's the last person of the 3 ever to get medical care. And I'm always harping on her, saying, you know, what happens to Candace if you get really sick? And she says, no, the issue is that I need to make sure Candace is taken care of, the 5-year-old. So often women put their needs after the rest of the family, which is another reason. So I can't say biologically, women are the weaker sex and we die faster from AIDS.
No, just that.
That's the fact for a whole realm of reasons. Okay, other things in the social impact arena, besides this caregiving issue that women are the primary caregivers in families, sometimes of other family members with HIV, sometimes just of other family members, elderly parents or spouses.
Well, isn't I think this would come under social media.
Yeah, there's certainly kids in it, yes.
And that is that a great number of the women and the children are a minority, women and children. And unfortunately, the majority culture can very easily say, well, it's them.
Mm-hmm. Very easy to say that. And many of those folks are also poor and without health insurance in this country and around the world. Lots of poverty around. So that certainly affects what effort the majority culture, if you will, might put into combating HIV and AIDS in those communities, how much money we're willing to put into prevention or early detection of HIV for those folks. Okay.
We also talked about the fact that they imply promiscuity and that is less acceptable among women.
Okay. Talk about that. Anybody else talk about promiscuity? Okay. Say anything more or different from what was said here? You might talk about prostitution in particular?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what about prostitution? Where'd you put that? Social?
Economic.
Okay, how's that? Apply both or either?
Well, this is her means of support. What happens if she no longer can do that? But then she has the ethical question, do
family, and they need to support their family too, and they have another need to support, so it's, you know, definitely economic.
Mm-hmm. Prostitution is not solely a women's issue. There are male prostitutes around the world, but it is primarily a female issue. And for many people, it is primarily an economic issue. That would be my perspective and bias also. There also are questions in some countries of the world, Thailand in particular. Let me just double check this. In Thailand, some teen girls call themselves dancers as they're looking for husbands. And part of what they do is prostitute themselves in the search for a husband, and they don't use the term prostitution. We don't think about that necessarily as being risky behavior. Same true in Kenya. Some of the times women prostitute themselves in search of husbands. In a lot of countries, men who are forced to prostitute in order to provide for their families have to travel long distances in order to find partners. And those folks come back often and infect girlfriends or wives back in the rural villages, which is very common. Some parts of the country, the prostitution rate of HIV infection is up to 40%, which it is in some of the groups of prostitutes in our country, in some of the big cities, 40% of prostitutes. What's also important about that is that we not focus on the prostitutes as women being the cause of HIV infection spreading, because we need to think about the fact that it is easier for a woman to get HIV from a man than for a woman to give HIV to a man. In our brothels in Nevada, where it's the only place prostitution is legal in this country, right? Anybody from Nevada? Anybody want to say they're from Nevada?
After that word.
The fact of the matter is, in those bordellos, the prostitutes, the workers, sex workers, are required to be tested every month to be found whether they're disease-free and to be advertised then as disease-free. None of the customers are required to use condoms or to prove that they're disease-free. Once these women are found to be HIV infected on these monthly tests, they're kicked out, they're given no benefits, no health insurance, no care, no coverage, they're done. So it is something to think about, our differences in sort of who's responsible and who's taking responsibility. It's also important to know that a lot of prostitutes say that their clients will offer them more money if they don't have to use a condom, will offer them more money if they allow them to sort of repeatedly have sexual intercourse, which puts women at greater risk. And then clearly, just the idea of having a multiple number of sex partners and different sex partners puts prostitutes at great risk. So I just want us to make sure we think about not just sort of blaming the women who are the prostitutes, thinking about what are all the reasons they do this behavior.
Well, I just remember another way that came out was when the whole Magic Johnson thing. There was so much, the whole early question was who gave Magic Johnson AIDS?
Yeah, even me.
And very little discussion early on. It came out later with women's groups really saying, well, let's talk about how many women were probably infected by Magic Johnson.
Yeah. Especially then when Wilt Chamberlain comes out and brags that he's had 20,000 women, had sex with 20,000 women, which if somebody figures out is like virtually impossible for a man his age. Yeah, it's like seven a day or something. But the notion that a famous basketball star can even brag like that and not be like booed out of the court is amazing to me. And to many women, so I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah.
Just on prostitution, first of all, I think that a lot of people who are in prostitution in different countries of the world don't call it prostitution, they call themselves sex workers. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the areas where health education around AIDS has been done more than in other groups. So I think that the prostitutes or sex workers shouldn't be blamed for all the HIV or...
Well, if we look at especially Thailand, I've mentioned, with this huge sex industry, and we look at who the people are who come to Thailand on sex tours. They're American and Japanese males, primarily, if you look at that. It's also very difficult in a country where prostitution or sex working is illegal, like our country, except for Nevada, to study these folks. So we have to keep in mind that studies of prostitutes are studies of people who are breaking the law, so how likely are they going to want to be to come in and be tested or to be interviewed? So we have to take all these kind of statistical ideas with some grain of doubt about what that's about. But yeah, I appreciate that.
I'm curious, how does, in this case, the Nevada people justify monthly testing, realizing that there's going to be a delay time between transmission and availability of...
I suppose they just came to that instead of every other day or every 6 months. It's a good question.
Nuns would be helpful, I think, right?
But for other...
Right. And for other STDs, she makes the point, other sexually transmitted disease, although...
That's actually where it came from. That's a historical thing, and it's just been every 30 days when it was the other sexually transmitted diseases. So it doesn't address his question, but that is where the 30 day thing came from.
Because your question is right. Any day a person can be HIV positive and pass it on. We'd have to do it daily, too. Or even more than daily.
Well,
that's
right. That's right.
There's always going to be a window until we can test for the antigen itself, for HIV itself. Yeah, okay. What's some spiritual issues? People spend a little bit of time on that, whether they're different for women or what they might be especially for women. We are a religious community here, generally. We can think about that.
Something that's really sad to me is in listening to people in counseling situations, sometimes a man who finds out that he has AIDS is so angry that he makes a vow to infect as many people as possible. I've heard that before. And I don't know if there's a difference in male, female decisions about that. But I've heard men say, I'm going to infect at least 100 people before I die.
Mm-hmm. I've also heard men say that. I haven't heard women say that, but I've worked with many, many, many fewer women than men. It's also a lot easier for a male to infect more people than it is for a female to infect more people. But I think the anger brings up, you know, in the spiritual realm, the sense of why me and why now and why not my neighbor or that why not that drunk person down the street or why me at this time when I support three children and I didn't know my husband was bisexual or I had no idea that he used drugs 5 years ago or I even did know and he hasn't used for 5 years and so why now does it come up and have to be me infected? Very difficult. My friend Nancy, who has HIV, is a very strong Catholic and the hardest thing for their family, they live in a town of 300 people outside Northfield. It's all Catholic. They live across the street from the church. Their children go to the church school. For 2 years, they didn't tell a soul about HIV. Then they told the priest, who fortunately at the time for them was very caring and loving and sort of worked with them about how slowly to tell people in the community, especially since Candace was going to start the preschool at the church school. It was most difficult for her to reconcile this, how can I believe in a loving God and not trust a loving community to care for us and be with us? Fortunately, they've had a marvelous experience, which I don't think is always the case. In fact, I know it isn't always the case. But I really view this arena as raising questions for people primarily about our connection to the ultimate, to God, and how we view our God and the God of people around us, our family members, and those we love. Lots of questions for women about why me. I know our media has played up so much the notion of innocence and guilt in HIV and AIDS. And women are often seen, along with their children, as the, quote, innocent victims. I don't appreciate that analogy. I don't appreciate the discussion about it. But a lot of women do say, I had absolutely no idea. And, I only had sex with my husband. And he was the one who was bisexual. Or he was the one who was a turned-around IV drug user, or is an IV drug user. And I just didn't know. So it isn't to say they're innocent, but it is to say many of them feel a lot of anger and a lot of question about why it is me at this particular time. Other comments in spiritual religious realm?
A family that I know, the son is gay and is toward the end of his process in AIDS, and the father has totally rejected. He would not believe that his son was gay, and now won't deal with the fact that he has AIDS, and so the mother is handling this whole spiritual process, going up to Seattle all the time by herself, taking care of him, and coming home and having to say that it doesn't exist. And I can't imagine the spiritual
and meeting the needs of her husband at the same time as a wife. So that's a poignant example. And I don't have answers to why it is that it seems anecdotally more often the moms or the women carry the process for the family. I suspect it has something to do with male homophobia in a gay male situation particularly, but it does add an extra burden, and I think churches and church people need to be aware of that extra level of care and connection that that woman needs, while at the same time not sort of blaming her husband for reacting the way he needs to react at the time and can't be doing otherwise, at least right now. I mean, ideally he'll have some time and space to process it through a little more, but it's a very difficult situation, and not unlike many I saw, many.
What's your experience with women, mothers, dealing with other women who have AIDS? Is it as accepting as it is if it's their son, or?
I have much less experience just because there's so many fewer women, but I'm thinking about the mom and the mother-in-law of Nancy. I think it depends a great deal on what the reason for transmission was or what the cause of transmission. In this particular case, the husband had a blood transfusion when he was in the service in the early 80s, passed it on unknowingly, and the two children were fine, and the third one got it, AIDS, and that's how the parents found out. So all those women and sisters have been wonderful, doing child care and taking them to cities for treatments, etc. I think in IV drug-using communities, you'd see a much more fractured family system. Often even fractured friendships, so that the women who are infected, who are IV drug users themselves or partners of IV drug users, have much less support in general from women or men in their lives. Many of those families have cut them off. I think a lot about the women who are infected by husbands who are gay or bisexual, who then divorce them. Those women are in a very difficult situation, having been married to a gay or bisexual man who then came out, and later she finds out she's infected, and who can she tell those two pieces? In some ways, it's the same double whammy as people who are closeted gay or bisexual coming out saying, this is who I am and this is what I have. The women are in a similar bind, except part of what comes up in the social arena is there are many, many, many fewer resources for women with HIV and AIDS in this country. Because initially it was primarily men, and primarily gay men, and those folks really have rallied and formed all sorts of organizations and groups and gotten monies to care for each other and have buddy programs and support groups. And Nancy, my friend, in order to get to a support group of other women with HIV, goes once a week to the cities and meets with like six others who have to get together. She is so isolated in a rural area with her concerns that it causes some real problem just in terms of isolation for those women.
Tangentially related to the spiritual, I do think it's an indictment of the church that we focus on the cause of contracting the virus rather than addressing the needs of the people who have it.
So our first question, whether we say it out loud or inside, I wonder how we got it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How did she get it? And I really encourage us to acknowledge our questions, but to not say that one out loud, because it's like the final nail in a coffin for many people to think, well, that's the question, and there's the judgment, and I shouldn't have said anything about it. Mm-hmm. Some of you heard me talk yesterday about Kenneth Kaunda, who's the former president of Zambia, whose son died of AIDS. He said it's not so much where this virus came from, but where it's going. Not so much how she got it, but what she needs from us now as a community.
We do that very often, too, with people who are suffering from lung cancer. These moments like her. It's probably your own fault.
First thing you say, yeah, it's very true.
And I think part of that is a need on our own part to be able to differentiate ourselves from that person and be able to then be safe. Mm-hmm. Well, this is why they got it here for it. It will not happen to me.
Which again severs the connection that I see spiritual communities, religious communities being about, this connectedness, and we're trying to separate that once again. Let me add one other thing just in these two realms sort of, and that is an indictment in some ways against my profession. Social workers, psychologists, therapists have based all that we know about HIV and AIDS counseling on models of gay men also, just like the medical community has. So when we have women come to us with their issues about being HIV positive, we're not sure really what to do about it yet either, because that is something we're just beginning to sort of separate out and saying, your issues are going to be real different than issues for men. I need to cut us off here quickly. I'm sorry to say we come back to this maybe, but I do want to talk about children specifically a little bit so we don't skip over them. Now, I have not personally worked with many children with HIV or AIDS. My friend Nancy's Candace has full-blown AIDS, and I follow them very carefully and through a lot of hospitalizations, so I have some awareness a little bit. But let me just talk a little about some of the demographics and then some of the specific issues for kids with AIDS. In this country, we have about 4,000 children under 13 who have full-blown AIDS. In some Caribbean and African countries, up to 10% of people with AIDS are under 5. 10% under 5, and we're talking about like 0.03% of our children are under 13. So it's a much bigger issue in developing world nations. By the year 2000, the World Health Organization estimates up to 10 million children will have HIV in the world, and another 10 million will be orphaned because of HIV. And I think that is an issue we're not hearing much about, particularly sub-Saharan Africa, where scores and scores in different communities of adults ages 20 to 40 are dying, and their children are being orphaned. I was just at a conference in D.C. of international social workers, and a couple of Ugandan social workers were talking about a very creative effort in small communities in Uganda where they're, 50% of their kids are orphaned, and they're beginning to teach these kids to garden and do some of their own economic craft things for sale and sort of keeping them in small communities in the neighborhood, and occasional adults will sort of be in to help them out, but really organizing children to take care of themselves, which is just an amazing thought, an overwhelming thought. The orphan rate is amazing. AIDS currently is the 9th leading cause of death right now in this country for kids aged 1 to 4. 9th leading cause of death. Children who are infected at birth, usually 50% of those kids will show symptoms by age 1. 70% of them will have AIDS full-blown by age 2. But some children don't show symptoms again until age 4 or 5. However, that is much shorter than adults who often don't show symptoms for 8, 9, 10 years. Children will show symptoms much earlier than that. Let me just see here. We talked a little yesterday about the testing that can be done for HIV in kids. The current blood test that we have, the antibody test for HIV, is really only accurate once kids are about age 15 months to 18 months, and that's because the test will show up mom's antibodies, which the baby carries, until that point. So it's hard to know early on if a child is going to be positive or negative. Some university settings are trying a new antibody test that will test for just the child's antibodies to HIV, and that can be done 3 to 6 months. Some other universities have also developed an antigen test, P24 antigen test, which tests for the virus itself, but both of those are quite expensive still, not used a lot. The key thing there is more and more medical people in this country are saying we treat children earlier with AZT, with pentamidine, with IV gamma globulin treatments every month, that perhaps we can stave off the progression to AIDS. So there are some treatments available here. Now, that's the US and the Western world, of course. Most of the rest of the world has nothing available for these children. We have lots of children dying from HIV and AIDS.
How do those treatments affect children?
Well, it depends. What kids usually get are respiratory infections related to the suppressed immune system. Some get cancers and some other things, but little Candace goes in once a month for an IV for 2 hours of this gamma globulin, which is what a lot of us get when we go to other countries, right? It's just sort of additional protection against certain infections. They've sort of turned this into a friend. Somehow this shot or this injection is a friend of hers, and it's going to help her live. And I'm sure it depends on the support the kid has. Children who are in, we hear about New York hospitals, New Jersey hospitals having border babies whose parents leave them there because they can't take care of them, whose parents have died of HIV-related illness already, and those kids live in hospitals. Mm-hmm. 3 years ago at Holden, a woman came up after a session and said, I spend all my volunteer time, 10 hours a week, going to this New York hospital, rocking AIDS babies. Mm-hmm. And that's what she did. It's a tremendous example of sort of what we can do for care. But for those kids, life, I'm sure, feels much more hopeless than for Candace, who can come home and has her two brothers to play with and her friends come over, and it's a much nicer environment. The jury's still out on how effective these early intervention treatments are in this country. And people are obviously working hard to try to make sure we can do more for kids. Some of the more common pediatric diseases with HIV are bacteremia, meningitis, other bacterial infections, and some of the other opportunistic infections that adults also get. Many kids develop growth delays or developmental delays and regress from walking to going back to crawling, and a lot of them look much younger than their true age. Kids also, more than adults, get neurological problems fairly early on with HIV. Difficulty speaking, sometimes thinking straight, or they lose words that they had before. Some of these kids are going to need feeding tubes, breathing treatments, IV medications, as I mentioned. A lot of the big problem in some of the larger cities, as I mentioned too, is that these kids have moms or dads who are IV drug users, or poor, or unemployed, or without health insurance. So it's become a big issue to look at foster care and adoption of HIV babies, HIV kids. And then ethical questions arise about whether kids with HIV ought to be in daycares, and who in the daycare should know that the kid's positive. Should these kids go to school? Although that has essentially been solved across the country, that there's no question that kids with HIV should be allowed to be in school. Foster parents take in an HIV baby for a weekend. What ought they know about HIV, and who should tell them? What other questions might come up about kids and HIV that you've thought about, or any experiences people have had?
Maybe this is a little bit more related to your one about foster care and adoption, but ironically, one of the ways that homophobia has played out in a few places is that gay couples who oftentimes are not eligible to adopt kids will be given an HIV-positive kid, mm-hmm. because somehow this kid is presumably less valuable to society, and therefore you can afford to give it to a gay couple.
Yeah, that's a very good example. In Minnesota, we've had very little need yet for foster care for AIDS babies or AIDS children, because we only have about 15 that we've ever had with AIDS in Minnesota. But the only licensed foster care home ready and waiting now is a lesbian couple. They're the only ones willing, and as Dan points out, they're the ones who are willing to license for
this. The flip side of it, too, is that oftentimes the gay community are the communities where people have had much more time and experience dealing with HIV, and so
they may be better.
May be the ones who know best
it's absolutely
how
right.
to give this kind of
how
care.
To do it.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah.
I can't say this in English. Que llama mi atención. What all of you are talking about is what are you going to do after the people have this? And I read some of these articles, and I'm really shocked that in the United States, where there are so many resources available for people to learn, that your school systems are not doing health education about AIDS. So number one, I think if you're conscious church people, you have to analyze this within your churches and then pressure your school systems to teach about AIDS in grade school. Mm-hmm. And teach about, have sex education, and not just any sex education, but progressive kind of sex education being done in your schools, because we're not going to cure this disease, and it's going to cost billions of dollars to treat people, but the most important thing that we can do anywhere in the world is teach people about this disease, because it's everywhere, and it's going to come here it's going to be an epidemic here someday, just as it's an epidemic in Africa. Asia is the next continent that's going to be heavily hit by AIDS, and then it will be here. And so we can do something, we can educate people, but it's going to depend upon you people putting the pressure on so that the education is done. Kids want to learn, you know that, and we have a responsibility to teach them.
Yeah, and it really varies state by state what kind of education is mandated on AIDS down to how low. Some of you may know in your own state where that is, but it's worth asking. Minnesota mandates AIDS education down to fourth grade in the public schools. And I will say that the leaders in AIDS education in Minnesota have been the parochial Catholic schools. Mm-hmm. They mandated AIDS education, I think, 6th and 7th grade, but way before our legislature said, yes, we need to have it. And I think Minnesota generally is a fairly progressive state with this kind of issue, but it took us till 89, I think, to mandate that education down that far. So I think Maria is absolutely right. And talking to first graders about AIDS doesn't mean talking about anal sex and condoms. It means talking about germs and keeping your hands clean and you know, that we need to take care of people who are sick and be nice to them and clean up blood if it spills, or, you know, whatever it might be. I'm not an expert in talking to little kids, but there are gradations of what we do with HIV and AIDS education. Yeah.
In Oregon, just reference, I'm a science teacher, and I'm also now, we're also now